Immersive cultural enrichment on board and on shore. Freshly prepared regional cuisine. Viking sails the rivers of the world and takes travelers to the heart of iconic destinations. Discover more at Viking.com.
Learn how to plan, invest, and live smarter with the Raymond James For What It's Worth podcast. Featuring insights from leading professionals, you'll get the latest in wealth management, market commentary, and engaging research. Listen today at RaymondJames.com/podcast.
I'm Jace Laycobb, and you're listening to Masterpiece Studio. If this final episode of the second season of All Creatures Great and Small left you close to tears, never fear, it did the same for me.
It's usually just us, isn't it, Tricky?
He may be small, but he fills every room of that house with such love and life. We have so much fun together.
From Mrs. Pumphrey's quiet, almost final moments with her beloved Tricky Woo, to James Herriot's gentle Christmas phone call with his parents, this was an episode packed with scenes bound to make you cry.
Mom, I never said thank you.
For what?
If it wasn't for you and Dad paying for me to go to college, I wouldn't be here, doing the job I love. I'll always, always be so grateful for everything you did for me.
Don't be daft. You're our boy. What else are we gonna do?
In short, it's a perfect finale to a perfect season of television. Warm, thoughtful, and kind.
Scrubs up rather well. He's got that mysterious brooding thing down to a T.
There's not much mystery about someone eating a sausage roll.
Here, war paint. Audrey, you are allowed a moment to enjoy yourself. In fact, I insist upon it.
Series star Nicholas Ralph is grateful for the chance to return to the Dales for another season, and yet again for seasons 3 and 4, and he returns to the podcast to take a look back at season 2 and preview the stories still to come. This week, we are joined by All Creatures Great and Small star Nicholas Ralph. Welcome.
Hi, Jace. Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Yeah, very well.
So James begins series 2 back in Glasgow with his parents with a job offer to remain in the city. And he ends it in the Dales, engaged to Helen and committed to Siegfried's vet practice. Do you feel like we've seen James finally find his place in the world and perhaps find a sense of self-confidence that maybe he was lacking when the series first began?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this series, as you say, James really grows into himself, I think personally and professionally. You know, he starts to fill out his vet's coat a little more, as it were. And we see him, you know, stand up to Siegfried and all the while, you know, with respect. And he wants the best practice possible so that they can help out the patients and the people of Derby in the best possible way. And he being the new kid on the block, he can do that. Siegfried might be a little more stuck in his ways. So they balance each other out really well with regards to that as well. And now we see James and Helen have this slow burning romance. He kind of grows into himself a little bit in that way as well. And because he can be quite tentative, and sometimes these take that leap. And we see again throughout the series, Siegfried, Tristan, kind of giving James a little nudge here and there when he needs it. And Helen giving James a little nudge here and there when he needs it. But by the end, yeah, like you say, he really feels like he's found his place. And I think shows that, you know, you see that growth in him, in confidence and everything else. So we leave him in a very good place, I think.
You say he's tentative, and I want to sort of thread this needle a bit. There has been this notion that James Herriot is committed, he's kind, he's perhaps a little too practical. We and Helen discover that he is ultimately a romantic at heart. Is it that he sees catastrophe around every corner, as Helen and Siegfried believe, or is James transformed not only by everyone at Skeldale House, but by the Dales as well?
Yeah, I think a bit of both. It's certainly the Dales and everyone around him has had a huge impact on him. But at the same time, as you say, he's just kind of finding his place in the world. You know, he had a very different idea of who the vet he wanted to be and the man he wanted to be. You know, working with small animals in a lovely practice, nice and warm in Glasgow, you know, with state-of-the-art equipment. And what he's found himself in is working in a small practice where things are falling apart, out in the high dales with the snow and the rain and horses and cows kicking him. So, you know, it's very different. But I think he's fallen in love with that, fully embraces that now. And yeah, and we see the embers of the man that James is going to be moving forward. But yeah, certainly, everything contributes to that, the people around him, the place, and just him within himself as well.
I mean, when it comes time for James to declare his love for Helen, he actually is quite spontaneous. His unexpected proposal in front of the grandeur of the Dales, to me, is the very definition of romantic. Has he redeemed himself, or has he revealed his true self all along here in this scene?
I think we're seeing the man that he is and was all the time deep down. He just may perhaps lacked a bit of the confidence. Maybe the execution in it, and to fully realize it even in himself. But I think it was always there, definitely. You know, you see it, but he falls in love with Helen the first time he sees her, and that just grows and grows, and you know that romantic within him, I think, is burning throughout all that time. I think he would love nothing more than to take her out and, you know, to date her, court her, and things. But yes, it does take him a minute to realize that. So, but I think it was always there somewhere. It needed ignited, and I think Helen as well ignites it in him. You know, it's she shows him so much of what he perhaps didn't even realize he had within him. I think, yeah, and together, I think they're an unstoppable team.
And James, as we know, is a city lad. His beliefs and practices often run against the traditionalist bent of the Yorkshire farmers he's helping. He fails to ask Richard Alderson for Helen's hand before proposing, for example.
You know, I can't. I don't picture her face the way that I used to. Time passes. But I see it in them girls of mine. I see it in our Jenny. She has that look when she gets cross, and our Helen has a smile. I see it sometimes when I catch her looking at you.
Aye. Mr. Alderson, I love Helen. I'll take care of her.
I doubt that. She'll be one taking care of you, lad.
With your permission.
What for? You've already asked her, haven't you?
I did. I have. How did you know?
I told you. That smile. A mother's smile. Listen. No point asking me for my permission, lad. That lass does exactly as she chooses. Like a mother. Stubborn. That were Helen's mothers. My John. Might you use it?
I'd be honoured. Thank you.
Aye. Good lad.
What's riding on that scene between James and Richard when he finally does ask and Richard already knows?
Yeah. Well, I think there's perhaps a lot more riding on it for James in his head. I think he would probably get a bit more wound up about it, think and overthinking it perhaps, than what it actually is. Because I think Richard Alderson appreciates where, you know, the man that James is and where he's coming from and things like that. But I think before that conversation, I could imagine James being in his head and maybe having sleepless nights and, you know, before it, really winding himself up. And for him, it'd be, everything would be on the line, yeah. But of course, we see, you know, we see that lovely scene between the pair of them, and yeah, and he knows that he knows the kind of man James is, and, yeah.
I mean, what does Richard offering Helen's mum's ring to him mean to James?
Yeah, I just think it just means everything, really. Because there's being accepted, you know, by the father and you know your intentions and everything like that, and that is just that's something else, you know, that's the cherry on the cake. Or I mean, I think it's yeah, really quite emotional moment for James, and something he never expected, of course. But I mean, yeah, what a sentiment, what a signifier of just the kind of respect that he holds for one another as well. I think James really, you know, couldn't appreciate that more. And of course, it's just perfect for Helen as well.
Episode 5 keeps coming up in these interviews because of the cricket match. This seems to be a very sort of cricket mad cast. I was very surprised to find out that Patricia Hodge is a sort of cricket fanatic. James isn't exactly a cricket pro here. He does pretty well. But how much fun were the cricket scenes to film for you?
Yeah, it was great fun. And we did that. That was the final week of shooting in July. And it was lovely all week. You know, the sun was out and it was great. And we had, you know, all the extras were there. Everybody was done up. A lot of the farmers that we hadn't seen, some of the farmers we hadn't seen from season one returned, you know, for that episode. So it was great. It was such a laugh. And James, of course, is not very good at cricket. And I have never played cricket, so that was fine. true to character. But yeah, no, it was a very fun week. And some of the guys, you can see some of the guys were absolutely thriving on it. I think, you know, Sam West, who plays Siegfried, of course, he's a big cricketer, so he was loving it. As was Matthew Lewis, you know, Hugh Halton, and some of the other guys. So yeah, they had a lot of fun. I would have preferred a game of football.
So you weren't downplaying your skills then?
Ever so slightly. I could if I made contact, I could still, you know, rip that ball quite far. But but no, I'm nowhere near, you know, Matthew Lewis and these guys.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsors. Ocean voyages, expeditions, river journeys. Viking is dedicated to bringing travelers closer to the destination, offering a small ship experience and a shore excursion in every port. Learn more at viking.com. Coming up next on Masterpiece on PBS, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office continues Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, followed by the finale of Alice and Jack at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central. Though I do love the thought of James and Helen moving into his tiny bedroom at Skeldale House with Tristan in the cupboard, comedy ensues. But Siegfried does offer them a bedsit at the top of the house. I love James's line.
I really am sorry. I shouldn't have assumed. It's just because we're going to be living here after we marry, I mean.
Oh, right.
That's what... I know we should have spoken about it, but I need to be at Skeldale House to do my job. I'm on call at nights, and there isn't even a telephone up at Histon Grange. I can't very well sleep in the phone box at the end of your lane.
No, I understand that.
I mean, do you think that they should have discussed this previously?
Yes, probably. I think it's an oversight from James. I think as well, there's a lot going on for all the characters, of course. There always is. But yeah, it's one of those things that James hasn't given very much thought to, because as well, I think there's a naivety there, of course, but at the root of it perhaps is that he knows, or certainly feels like, as long as he's with Helen, then everything will be all right. And that doesn't matter, you know, where they're staying, where they're at, and their roles within one another. He, a little bit naively, just goes, as long as we're together, everything will be all right. And that is the case, but at the same time, well, I believe that to be the case, but at the same time, there are practical things that you need to talk about. So, you know, like where you're going to live, for example, is quite a useful thing to talk about. So, yeah, I think, yeah, sometimes those things passing by. But yeah, at the root of it, I think as long as they're both together, I think whatever they may be, they'll be absolutely grand.
Despite this being set in 1938, there are palpable thematic overlaps with the world today. Families spending Christmas apart during a global pandemic, being far from home, etc. Despite his choice to remain in the Dales, James holds on to his roots and he carves that winter woman like his dad does. What did you make of that as a symbol for James here?
Yeah, as you say, it's holding on to that root. So home, you know, home is where the heart is after all. And he'll always, I think even the man himself, Alf White, he was known as the Scotch vet because he never lost his Scottish accent, even though he lived in the Dales for as long as he did, decades upon leaving Glasgow. So you always have that Scottish heritage. And also it's just a nod back to home and to his mum and dad, to the family, because his dad would normally do it. Now James is doing it. It's another signifier, I think, of him growing into that man, as we talked about before. You know, he's finding his place in the world and what that means to him. You know, he's building that as well. He's building that for himself. And so I think, yeah, it's another wee nod to that, and that he's becoming his own man. And it's his time to make the Caillach and say the little bit of Robbie Burns by the fireplace. Yeah, another signifier of him growing up.
There were quite a few emotional beats in this episode, but the one I have to say that truly just killed me was the phone call between James and his parents in that phone box in Glasgow. How did you get into the headspace to channel that level of emotion, and what was this scene like to shoot?
Yeah, I suppose, firstly, when we got the script through and I read it, I loved it. I thought it was, the writing was just so good. Completely understood where the character was coming from at that moment. I just thought it was brilliant. And also, I have similar thoughts and feelings towards my parents. You know, I was very lucky and very fortunate in that they supported me when I decided, you know, I wanted to pursue acting and everything like that. And, you know, they set me up for life in a great way as well. So there were sentiments there that I could latch onto and, you know, kind of use or certainly explore when working on doing this scene. And that's kind of what I was focusing on. And the build up to it, and then of course you put that all out of your mind, and then you're just in the scene doing it. So I think that, you know, that was kind of the work I was doing beforehand, and then doing it was grand. I mean, you're on this lovely set with wonderful supportive people. So and also just as far as acting is concerned and being an actor, I love things like that. I love, you know, I get my hands dirty in the challenges of working with horses and cows. And I also love the challenges of having a scene that's a little bit more emotional and you have to show a bit of vulnerability and things like that. And again, it's just a wonderful challenge. And that's the great thing about these wonderful writers that we have. And Ben Vanston, a lead writer, he gives you these opportunities and you just want to grab it with both hands and really, you know, really find the truth of it. And hopefully, like you say, people will maybe watch it and feel something from it and maybe recognize it. And so if that happens, then wonderful. Yeah.
I mean, reduced me to tears, Nicholas. It was just such a beautiful, emotional scene. There's no doubt. I love the little details in this scene. I love that Helen is sitting on the stairs just by James as he talks to his parents. This episode seems to have a huge leveling up for these two. We talked about this a little bit, but she is sort of prematurely thrust into the role of Mrs. Harriet. But she also runs with it. As we said, she sort of bridges the gap between the farmers and the vets and finds her place, perhaps, for what will become their married life. How would you describe where James and Helen are sort of emotionally at this point as series two comes to an end?
Yeah, I think, throughout we've had this as a very, very slow, tentative kind of stepping towards one another and reacquainting under these new circumstances, and what is a very slow burn, romance, kind of love story, to the point that they're engaged by the end of this series. Now, of course, a lot of people were asking me, and I know it's on social media, screaming out for a Christmas wedding. But of course, Helen, you know, previous Christmas just had the wedding that never was, and you know, there would be no way that she would want to be, you know, getting married the next Christmas, and you know, that wouldn't be an interest to James either. So yeah, so I think we see them kind of closer than ever, and stronger as a couple, and now also, as you say, moving through some of the practicalities of it and things, because yeah, you're full of love and it's all, and that's wonderful and it's great, but there is then the, you know, the practical side of it, and where we're going to live, and what are our roles going to be, how are we going to balance out one another as a couple, as a team. So yeah, I think we see a solidifying of that, and the old addendum, communication is key. So we see a good bit of that going on, where there could have been a little bit more before. So but yeah, I think we see them in a really good place by the end of the episode.
James initially declines Mrs. P's offer of a fireside glass of sherry, but then thinks the better of it before organizing an entire Christmas lunch at Pumphrey Manor so that Mrs. P isn't alone on Christmas. What triggers this impromptu solution to his and Helen's Christmas lunch dilemma?
Yeah, I think it all comes from the glass of sherry. He's about to rush off, and then, no, I've got time for a quick glass of sherry, nips in. And we'll see Pumphrey Manor in the state that it was, you know, all covered in sheets and perhaps a bit cold, and it's just Mrs. Pumphrey in there. So, and tricky, of course. So I think it's in that time in there that he maybe comes up with the plan of how best to go about the Christmas luncheon, and yeah, it turns out for the best.
The Christmas lunch scene at Pumphrey Manor unites all, or I should say nearly all, with the absence of Diana Brompton, of all Creatures cast. The Farnans are there, Mrs. Hall, Mrs. P, the Aldersons, even Gerald. Considering the COVID protocols of this season of production, what was it like to get to film these scenes together as a united cast?
Oh, just fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. And of course, we filmed the Christmas episode in June, I think it was. So it was, you know, it was sweltering, and I was lugging in that Christmas tree in a three-piece suit with a hat on. I was suffering from heat stroke, let alone COVID. But it was a lot of fun, and by that point the restrictions had, you know, they were lessening throughout shooting. So I think by that point, I can't remember where we were exactly, but they were definitely less than they were, you know, when we started. So yeah, it was an absolute joy. I mean, even on the first week of rehearsals back in February, when we were all, you know, we were all in masks, the windows were open in this very cold church that we were doing the rehearsals in. But it was crazy because I'd just been in a flat with one other person, my flatmate, for months. And then all of a sudden I was in this rehearsal room with 15 other people sometimes, you know, and all these people that, you know, we got on so well and I loved from the previous season. It was just so good. And it took a minute to, you were kind of, you were like, oh, it took a minute to get used to that again. And then you got on set and you'd meet all the crew that you'd worked with before, but they'd all have masks on. And then they'd come up and say, oh, hi, Nick, how you doing? Good to see you again. And you'd be like, oh, hi, mate. And then he'd take his mask and go, it's me, it's Dave. Oh, Dave, how you doing? Nice to see you again. So there was all that sort of stuff. But yeah, certainly to get everybody in. Though, like when I read that as well, that's another one, when you read in the script, the Mrs. Pumphrey scene, and you have all these characters, as you say, as an actor, again, that's just something that you're like, oh, that's going to be so much fun to do. And it was that. It was that. And again, it's like the crickets that we were talking about, you know, you see the cast list and you have all these farmers from season one, and we've got Matthew Lewis back in, and everybody, you know, again, everybody that you mentioned there before as well. It's so much fun. You just have such a great time, and we're very fortunate in that as well, that we do get along.
Patricia Hodge took over playing the delightfully eccentric Mrs. P in series two following the death of Dame Diana Rigg. How was it adjusting to Patricia's take on the character of Mrs. Pumphrey? Did the dynamic between James and Mrs. Pumphrey shift at all with Patricia stepping into the role?
I think if it, it the only the change that it would be natural in that James is now in a different place and knows Mrs. Pumphrey much better. So they have a slightly more, Mrs. Pumphrey becomes more and more like a part of the family. She's almost like the grandmother now. And it's just, yeah, it's just lovely. And Patricia was just fantastic from day one. She came in and really put a stamp on Mrs. Pumphrey, you know, doing it completely her own way, which I thought was fantastic and really funny. One of the first scenes I was in with Patricia was with her and Tricky, and she's almost using Derek, who plays Tricky, almost using Derek like a ventriloquist dummy, right? It was so funny. I was struggling to keep it together. It was brilliant. She's just been fantastic. And then even just offset, you know, being able to sit down and chat with her was a real joy as well.
We see how the Dales have changed James Herriot, but how do you feel James has changed the Dales? Is there a sense that his presence here in these people's lives, his innate kindness and care, have changed things for the better?
You know, I'd love to hope that and think that. Certainly, I think you're right in as far as we meet a lot of these kind of hardened, maybe embittered or slightly pessimistic, shall we say, Yorkshire farmers. And James even manages to soften some of them with his, you know, care and attention for the animals and always doing what's right. And we see that in season one as well with regards to the people cheating at the fair. In the fair episode 5, he even wins the respect of Mr. Dinsdale. So, you know, cheaters never prosper. Well done, lad. And who's been giving him a really hard time up until that point throughout the series. So yeah, I think exactly that. I think he's managing to soften some of these hardened Yorkshire farmers through his personality, through his kindness and compassion, and also through his work for, you know, his care for the animals and bringing in some of these new kind of ideas and more forward-thinking ways of practicing. Yeah.
As we look over the horizon to series 3, where do you feel James's story might be heading?
Yes. So we'll see there might be marriage and certainly more of the same, more of kind of bedding in and grounding in and growing, you know, those roots kind of expanding out even further in the Dales, with this kind of family that he has and the building as well of his life there. I think a continuation of that. And we'll see. I'm really excited to also find out.
All Creatures was picked up for a third series and a fourth at the same time. Does that give you sort of the opportunity to sort of exhale, to know that this is sort of a two-series plan, that you can kind of see this telescoping out as an actor in a way that allows you to play it without thinking, will it go on after this next year?
Oh yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. I'm absolutely buzzing. I'm so thrilled that we've been commissioned for another two. And as you say, yeah, as an actor, it's a fantastic place to be. I'll be with this character. Certainly moving forward for a little while longer. So it's a brilliant place to be in, and I'm just really looking forward to it. And like I said before, some more of these wonderful challenges, you know, these wonderful operations and procedures that we'll have to do. I'm sure the complexity of those will grow and change, and some more wonderful scenes that are maybe slightly poignant and funny. And you know, that's one of the great things about this show as well. You get to do scenes that are funny sometimes, and you get to do scenes that are a little bit heartfelt and emotional, and you get to do scenes that, you know, are really challenging because you're in the Dales and it's freezing and you're lying Superman at the back of a horse, you know, twilight. So you just never, every day is very different, and it's why I also love the show and I love playing the character of James.
So laughter, tears, and animatronic cows.
Yeah, exactly. Bring them on.
I cannot wait for more. Nicholas Ralph, thank you so very much.
Thanks, Chase. Cheers.
From one beloved returning series to another, the long-awaited second season of Sanditon is just over the horizon.
It was so kind of the Parkers to lend us their carriage. When I'm married, I shall have one just like this. And 4 footmen.
Only the 4?
I cannot decide who I am most excited to meet. They're all so vivid in your letters. I know Miss Lamb and I are destined to be the greatest of friends. Look, Charlotte, the sea! Are you not excited to be returning?
Head writer and executive producer Justin Young catches us all up with Charlotte, Georgiana, and all their friends here on the podcast March 20th. While you wait for the premiere, be sure to check out our special Making Sanditon preview podcast at pbs.org/masterpiece studio. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, and produced by Nick Anderson. Elishaba Etoup is our editor. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Suzanne Simpson. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises, Raymond James, and the Masterpiece Trust. Masterpiece Studio is officially a Webby Awards nominee for 2024. We are honored to be considered among such talented competition, but we need your vote. Head over to vote.webbyawards.com and vote for Masterpiece Studio in the podcast section, where you'll find us listed in the general television and film category. Voting closes Thursday, April 18th, so be sure to get your vote in soon. That's vote.webbyawards.com. Thank you.